over the summer, we're going to do things a little bit different. So rather than have just one person do a kind of normal preach, we're going to hear from a couple of people each Sunday, and they're going to share a little bit about a different event, a different time of someone that met with Jesus. And Em's going to kick us off today. And do you know what? I can't remember who you're going to do, but I'm looking.
Well,
I'm looking forward to hearing about it, but so go for it.
Yeah, I'm glad you can't remember, because I was panicking on the way in that I'd actually just picked my own story and hadn't even read what you said, but this is what we're going with. But yeah, I did just check, and it is what Steve did say. So we're looking at the woman at the well. And so I'm going to start by going through reading the story. Some of you may have heard it before, some of you may not. You may have heard it and never dwelled on it. You may have dwelled on it loads. So yeah, work with me and we'll I'll read it out and we'll go from there. But we're looking at John chapter 4, verse 1. Now Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but it was his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. He came to a town in Samaria called Sychar. To learn how to say that one. Like Lycra, it's Sychar. Near the plot of ground where Jacob had given to his sons, Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks the water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never need thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them like a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not get thirsty and not have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know, and we worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in the spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit and his worshippers must worship in the spirit and in the truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he." So we're going to just stop there. As I said, many of you may have heard this story before, but I hadn't really ever stopped to fully appreciate what we can learn. And in preparation for today, I've read it over a few times. And I've had time to unpack this encounter and delve a little more into Jesus' character. So for me, what stands out is Jesus' intention to break down social norms, his unconditional love and unwavering acceptance, and his deliberately intentional timing. So firstly, social norms. This story places two people who, according to society, should not be meeting, let alone having a whole conversation. We've got Jesus, a Jew, and a rabbi, and a woman, a Samaritan. The historical divide between the Jews and Samaritans, and perhaps someone more well-versed in the history of these ethnical differences and religious disputes might be able to explain this rift further, but in simple terms, they despise each other and they don't ever seem together. But furthermore, society in this time would have meant it was completely considered inappropriate for a woman to be talking alone to a man with whom she was not married on the outside of town. So this very conversation itself defies all the rules that society set. And this is because Jesus does not allow culture to dictate who he talks to and who he meets with. Now, thankfully, society today is a little more easygoing on the whole. And as a Christian in this country, I'm really grateful that we're not ostracised. But it doesn't mean we can't relate to having social barriers that stop us doing things. We will also have our own barriers that we know in our heart that we put up and stop us prevent us from talking and sharing our faith with others. There will be people that we will choose to not share our faith with. And I guess we can ask ourselves a bit this morning, as I've done, as I've gone through this, what are these reasons? And there are probably a myriad of reasons that we may not share our faith. It may be because people we've fallen out with, people that we've been offended by, people who offended us, or people that we've offended. We may judge others on how they look and how they act, on who they support and who they vote for. There might be many reasons. We might consider people to be too old, too young, too cool, or not cool enough. And the reality is our human minds cannot help but make judgments of others. And this is compounded by social media and peer pressure. And we're in a world now where there's so much going on around us that we're not used to. And we have preconceived ideas, and these can hinder who we talk to and share. Many years ago, when I was at university, I was blessed to have a really vibrant and bustling Christian union. We lived in a big, busy city. We were in Liverpool. And during my time in the Christian union, we had lots of opportunities to outreach. And it was probably a time in my life when I look back, and even at the time, it didn't feel simple. It was a simpler time, and I had a lot more time to be engaged in sharing my faith. And at times, it could be tough and intimidating. And I suppose I wasn't really ever aware of bringing anyone to faith. We spoke to lots of people on mission weeks and did lots of things. But some years later, I got a text from an unknown number. And it simply said, "Hi, I've kept your number for some reason. I'm not sure why, but we spoke at Christian Union Mission Week, and I wanted to let you know that I've become a Christian today." And truthfully, I don't remember this person. Even when I read the message, I couldn't recall who it was, and I couldn't remember call the conversation. And I'd never really thought I'd ever said anything that profound. But something I had said had been significant to someone else. It may have been significant to me, and it may have been insignificant to all of you, but for this one person, it had been a small seed that had now bared fruit. And so we shouldn't limit what we say, and we shouldn't allow things to stop us saying things. Words can mean different things to different people, and being open to talk and say something to others is often the first step. The second thing that stuck out throughout this story was the unconditional love and acceptance of Jesus. Now, the lady in the story, we don't know much about her, but we do learn she had multiple husbands and the fact she's living with a boyfriend. And we can start to picture a little bit of the shame and judgment that she may have felt. Andy spoke a few weeks ago about not belonging. And I imagine that this sentiment would have resonated with this lady in her community. So much so that she was scheduling her whole day, all of her chores around this shame. Sychar in Samaria is a desert town. And anyone going out in the open in the noon, it would have been a painful experience. We've all had a little taste of this. We're kind of in the middle of a heat wave. And I'm sure you can all vouch that no one wants to be going to carry heavy things in the middle of the day. But this woman's bigger priority was avoidance of people rather than avoidance of the heat. And so as she approaches this well, she would have seen someone there. And we don't know what was on her mind. And the Bible doesn't tell us about what she was thinking. Was she fearful? Did she consider turning back? Or was she actually just longing to speak to someone? We don't know. But what we learn is that she was welcomed by Jesus with open arms. We see a conversation unfold with no judgment, no rejection. And maybe for the first time in a long time, this woman belongs there in this conversation. And so we don't have to turn up perfect. We all carry sin, and we all have made choices that fall short of God's glory. But we are where we are, and we will always be welcome. And all we need to do is turn up, even when we're trying to hide. And so it brings us on to Jesus' timing, because it's perfect. And it was probably quite unusual for Jesus to be sat in the well in midday sun. He hadn't gone off to get food to the disciples, and it was also unusual for anyone to be fetching water at midday. Most of the women at the time would have gone early morning. And yet the timing of this story was perfect, because Jesus is there waiting. He's waiting to give this woman the space to be who she is. He's not gone looking for a crowd. He doesn't want to be a superstar, and he doesn't want a spotlight. Jesus meets us where we are, and he allows us. He finds our voice in the quiet. Now, I'm sure later we're going to hear about lots of noise at New Day. Okay, so this story is quite different. New Day is all about, it is a big event, and there's a lot of expectation on it, and that's amazing. But Jesus is going to turn up there, but he'll also turn up in the quiet. And we don't have to prepare or get our lives on track. We don't have to meet set criteria. And this one-to-one encounter demonstrates that Jesus has a purpose for each and every one of us. Each and every one of us, he wants to know. He wants to know us personally, and he is there waiting for us, whether we want to meet him or not. And so when we think about these circumstances, I can't help but think this woman is brave, really. She's probably been used to rejection and shame, and yet Jesus was unfazed by her past, and her response indicates that she felt comfort, a sense of belonging, and a freedom to speak, ask, and learn. And I want that. That sounds great. This woman is totally present in this meeting, and Jesus reveals himself to us, and she is called to action immediately. So if you go back to the Bible, back to chapter 28, we then see that the woman, then leaving the water jar, the woman went back to the town, to the people. Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. We just jump on to verse 39. We read, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he did stay for 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. And these are Samaritans that don't like the Jews, and they're still coming, they're coming. Jesus said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you have said. We have now heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the saviour of the world. So this is not a superficial conversation. This is not just making small talk at the well. This woman truly understood, and she was transformed immediately from a state of avoidance to engagement. And this is exciting. What is exciting about this story is that seeing how this transformation energizes this woman and completely propels her into action. She doesn't wait or prepare or book it in for next week. She just does it. And we can learn a bit from that. And I think we'll see a bit of this energy maybe in what the guys have to say from New Day. But then, even knowing all this and looking at all this, there's still a part of me that is left thinking, and this is the human part of my brain, she still hasn't got water. Now, I fully get that we're talking about living water here, which is by far superior, but we do still need to have a drink. And I'm sat here thinking, but you went back to the village, just take the water with you. Why didn't you carry it with you? That would have been so much more efficient. Now she's going to have to go back, come back later. She might not have time, okay? She's got to fit that into a day, another job. And this is my worldly brain. And I get caught up in the practicalities of life, as many of us may do, and I'm definitely guilty of being absorbed by the day-to-day, rushing around, being filled with deadlines, to-do lists, looking at house products that I think I need but I really don't. And I pack my days tight, so tight, with worldly things, and it's really easy to forget to leave space for God. And so actually the biggest thing that this story has impacted me is to remember to just stop. And stopping might look different to each and every one of you, but just stopping and allowing Jesus to meet us in the quiet. We need to put that water jar down, because this is not about our human needs. And I spend my life trying to fulfill human needs of what I think I need and what I think people around me need. And actually, this is all about our relationship with God. And so actually, Steve, when you gave me the story, it's been important for me. Because God is just waiting to meet us where we are. And I am at risk of missing that. Now, I know God can stop us in our tracks and he can catch us unaware. But I also think there is a lot of times when we block out God. We fill it with all these things that we think we need. Now, I spend a big chunk of my life at work, as many of us will. And I work in a busy veterinary clinic. And I have more to do in a day than I think I could possibly fit in. Ritual vouch for me getting home late, stressed, thinking there's just not enough time in the day. And this promotes my rushing around habits. Now, not long ago, probably shortly after I started thinking about this passage, a client had come in with a dog limping, and he referenced going to church to pinpoint the time at which the limp had started. Now, normally in a consult room, I've got 15 minutes, and I gloss over all the irrelevant facts that people like to give me about things that don't matter. But on this day, I chose to ask him about the church that he'd referenced as a passing comment. And it turns out this guy was a Christian. He had an amazing faith. He worked with the youth. He was a leader in the church. And he had so much energy and desire to discuss his faith. He discussed the joy it brings to his family, the troubles of raising kids in the world. And we went on and on and on. And so 25 minutes later, I was running really late. I'd not even looked at his dog that had a poor limp and had sat watching us. But the conversation had really been a blessing. It had been a blessing to me, and the energy and love that he had for God was infectious. And this conversation reframed my whole day. It allowed me to chat about him to the rest of the team. Now, it turns out many of the team called this guy Greek Jesus, okay? This guy was Greek, but actually they all said to me, he's so lovely. Something about him, he shared joy in just being who he was. And so actually, a group of people that don't have a faith still recognise something different about this guy. Okay, but actually investing a bit of time, stopping to discuss the Lord, it was amazing and actually made my day so much better. And even though these things happen, I still forget to do it. So this is a reminder to me and to us to stop. And so what does this all mean? What's my point? I guess we've skipped through this story and learned a few different things, but for me, what stood out to me is, what barriers have I got in my life? What things do I build up to prevent me sharing my faith? Am I ready to turn up and engage, to truly engage in a proper conversation? I realise I need to trust in God's timing and allow a bit more time for him. And stop. I need to stop and leave a bit more space for God to sneak in. Because when I do, I am blessed, I am excited, and I am energised. So if we continue to rely on ourselves and what we need and what we want, if we keep carrying that water jar, filling it with water and lugging it round, I don't think we'll ever be truly satisfied. We will continue the rat race of life. So I challenge us all to place our deepest longing in God, to be filled with the living water and allow us to overflow to others. For only he can allow us to live well. Thank you. I'll pass on to Ludo.
Thank you, Emily. That's great. So a bit of a different kind of morning, and in one sense we could just stop there. Maybe you're hoping, looking at the clock, thinking, I hope we're going to stop there, but we're not, all right? I've got a short thing I want to say to you, which is again about people that met with Jesus, okay? And I'd prepared this before we went to New Day. It mulled over my mind while we were there, and it might be the most important thing I've ever said from the front of this church, okay? How young is too young? And that's a question for each of us to answer, whether we're a youth that's been at New Day, a parent, a grandparent, just someone that comes to this church, okay? Because this is for everybody. In one sense, it's a so what and what next from what we've heard. How young is too young? We've heard from some of our young people today and some incredible stories of what they have seen God do. And I imagine, like me, that you're excited about what they have seen and been a part of. Excited for them. Excited by what God has done and is doing. There's a story in the Bible about Jesus as a child. There's only one story of Jesus as a boy that we hear. We don't hear anything from when he was born till he was about 2 when the wise men turned up, okay? Till then, when he was 30 when he began what was known as his ministry. We hear one story in the middle, and this is it. Luke 2, verse 41 to 49. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy, Jesus, stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they travelled on for a day, and then they began looking for him among their relatives and their friends. And when they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." And get this, "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know where I would be? In my father's house." We don't know anything about Jesus as a boy or as a young man, but we are told about this event. And I think that that is significant, for it is showing us something that we are meant to know, to understand, to think about, and to copy. Because this not just matters along with a whole bunch of other things that matters, but this is the only thing that matters. Of all of the things we could have been told about Jesus as a boy, we're told about his presence in the temple discussing the scriptures. I think we are told this not only to marvel at the wonder of Jesus, but I think there's something we need to copy. How young is too young? I'm going to be really quick. I can't stand for very long, actually. We're going to be really quick and really specific. I'm going to talk to the parents in the room. I'm going to talk to everybody. And then I'm going to talk, lastly, to the youth. First, to the parents. Your kids need things that are just for them. You know that, I know that, they know that. So when those things are on, make sure that they are there. Make sure that they are there. This is about your priority. This is about their opportunity. But this is about you as parents prioritizing the right things. Make sure that they are there. If you are making sacrifice to drive them to their hobbies, but not to church and to youth group and youth Bible study and all those kind of things, then you, as their parents, need to rethink that. You've got to rethink that. From the conversations that I've had with them this week, these are the changes that they want in their lives, but they are going to find those changes difficult, and they need you as their parents to support them in those changes. Those changes are going to hurt, they're going to cost, but they've been hearing about it all week, and I know from talking to them and praying with them that they are the changes that they want to make, but they need you to help them make those changes. Second thing, parents. Jesus was here, age 12, in the temple, discussing the word of God with adults. The amount of times that I get told that teenagers are too young for the service, too young for the prayer meeting, too young to serve, that they need their friends of their own age in order to be there. Even young adults are too young for a home group, too young for this or for that. Jesus was 12. Of all the things we could have been told about Jesus, we are told this, that he was in the temple discussing the scriptures, not with his age profile peers, but with adults. Jesus, who had emptied himself and was living as a human, living as a kid, where was he? In the temple with the adults, talking about the scriptures. And when his parents found him, he kind of said, "Where else would I have been, Mum? Where else would I have been?" Parents, and I say this, and I know it's going to sting, stop limiting your kids. Stop reducing their kingdom capability. I know what they heard this week. I know what they listened to this week. I know what they've thought about this week. We've seen and heard something of the impact that has had on them this week. So stop limiting them by their age. Get them to things. Get them to the things that are specifically for them. Get them to the things that are for everyone. Why are they too young to pray? Joy reminded me. Thank you, Joy. My mind was like a sieve. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock prayer meeting. Why is that just for the adults? Who said it ever was? Who said it ever was? We've heard this morning, haven't we, about praying, the value of prayer, the beauty of prayer, and praying together. Who says they're too young? Who says they're too young? Get them here. Get them here. Even if you don't want to come here yourself, get them here. Who says they're too young? It doesn't seem as though God does. You might say, but other kids aren't doing that. Why are we copying the other kids? They need to be copying Jesus, don't they? They've got to copy Jesus, not the other kids. To everyone else in the room, encourage them, talk to them, listen to them, include them, value them, adapt for them, which doesn't mean patronize them, but it means adapt your preferences for theirs so that they feel they can belong and be included. Cheer them on. Fan the flame of God as much as you possibly can. A couple of them said this morning, come and ask me. So go and ask them. Ask the second and the third and the fourth question about what they have heard, what they thought about it, what they think that means for their life, what they think it means for your life. Engage with them. Listen to them. Talk to them. Lastly, I said I'd be brief. Lastly, to the youth, and you kind of scattered about. I loved last week. I loved being with you all. I loved serving you all. I loved seeing and hearing what God was doing in your lives. I am not just your parents' pastor. I'm your pastor. It's my job to see you become disciples on fire for Jesus. So the youth in the room, this is for you. Start the revolution. Start the revolution. Most revolutions in history have been led by young people. They've been led by teenagers. So I, not just giving you permission, but I want you to start a revolution. For the parents of Jesus, they got him to the festival. They got him to that festival, but he made the most of it. experiences like New Day are incredible. I can see a few wristbands around. I cut mine off. We're not at New Day anymore. We're not at New Day anymore. The wristband carries your memories, but your heart carries Jesus. So cut the wristband off and live from the heart. Start a revolution. There are many people in this room who wish that they could go and experience it. Some will tell you, some might be too shy to say it. So that experience that you have just had, it's real. It's real, it's significant, but it's not permanent. The flame that God has put on your heart has been blown into a roaring fire this week. Your job now is to keep it alight. To keep it alight in your heart and in the heart of your mates. Is church like New Day? No. But coming to church is a heck of a lot closer to New Day than not coming to church. So lead the revolution. Break the mold. I literally want you to smash it to pieces. I want you to break every cultural stereotype for your generation. Go to a home group. They get the shock of their lives. Go to a home group. Come to the prayer meeting Wednesday, 8 o'clock. It's not too late. You didn't go to bed till half past 11. And that was if we were lucky. Go to the prayer meeting. Get involved in a service team. Talk across all generations. Jesus was sat in the temple at 12, talking about the scriptures with the adults. Go and do the same. Copy Jesus, not your mates. Both learn to teach and be learned to teach with and from one another. Get stuck in. Don't wait to be content. And don't wait for next year, but stretch what is possible in the here and the now. We have a significant group of young people aged between 14 and 17. We're going to do all we can to give you what you need specifically just for you. But do not limit your experience of church to something with youth in the title. Don't do that. Break the mold. Smash it to pieces. Go and get involved with everything. We've heard a bit this morning for the context. There's a group turned 18 in this last school year. And so they kind of top out of the youth. Smash the mold. For goodness sake, smash the mold. Join our home group. Stick with it. Break the convention of them being for your parents and for those that are older. People say, oh, we need a young adult's home group. Well, that might be nice, but who says we need one? Who says? Jesus was 12, sat in the temple with the adults. Break the convention. Break the commission. Don't just follow what's gone before. Blow everyone away with what God is showing you and doing in your life. Be at the prayer meeting. Take part. Seek God for your generation. This is why I think we have this account of Jesus as a kid and we don't have any others. Because this is important. He could have played sports. He could have been an Olympic gymnast. We have no idea. Because frankly, it doesn't matter in comparison to his love and relationship with Jesus. He could have been an academic genius with grade nines in the post in a couple of weeks' time. He could have been an artist. He could have been a great craftsman. He could have been all of these wonderful things. But what's more important was that he knew the Father and he shared it with others. That's all that matters. It's all that matters. So, to the youth that have been at New Day, lead the revolution. I'll buy the pom-poms and cheer you on. In a world that is increasingly dark, glow in it. To nick the phrase from our Kenyan pastor who preached this week, glow in the dark. Let me pray. Father, I thank you for the experience that many of our young people have had at New Day, but it doesn't for them end there, and it doesn't for us end there. For the parents in the room, of which I am one, Lord, I pray that we will prioritise for ourselves and for our kids the right things. And there is only one, and his name is Jesus. I pray that we would set the example, we would set the right priority. I thank you for the conversations I've had with the youth this week that they have instigated, that they want to come home from New Day and make the change in their life that honours you as their Lord and their Saviour. I pray that I and the other parents in the room wouldn't let them down. He wanted to make that change. but that we would sacrifice things in order to encourage them and enable them to do that. I pray for our young people that they would glow in the dark and they would see their generation come to know you and to praise you. I pray for all of us. This has not been a morning where we viewed somebody else's holiday snaps and gone, well, that was nice. Secretly getting bored as it's got near the end. But I pray that we would encourage them and cheer them on and pray for them and listen to them and talk to them and engage with them and hear from them as what you have done in their lives and what difference you want to make in the lives of not just them, but all of us. That we would all come to glow in the dark for you. Amen.